And welcome to our Midwest Ford Dealers Chiefs Live show. This is the play-on edition of Chiefs Live. Mitch Holthus with you, along with the 15-year-long snapper of the Kansas City Chiefs and New Orleans Saints and Pittsburgh Steelers and a Pro Bowler, Kendall Gammon. My whole mantra here has been play on. You put everything into that Sunday night game. Emotional, the world watches. You lose 27-17. What about jumping right back in and taking care of business this week?
Well, you're right, Mitch, because when you look at it, you do have to play on. You've got a six-game stretch. Four of those are division games. Of course, San Diego this week, and then you get back to Denver, bringing them to Arrowhead. So it's a big deal. This will make or break the season in terms of the division championship, I believe, these four games. So it's interesting to see what happened, because really, when you go to Denver, you have to play almost a flawless game, no matter who you are, to come out of there with a win. But the Chiefs came out of there, I think, with at least some confidence that they can play with this team, no doubt about it.
Yeah, again, it's only the fourth time in the last 15 years, sitting here on the 21st of November, that Kansas City's been in this position. You're basically, I gave the analogy, you're playing Sunday at Augusta with either Tiger Woods or Phil Mickelson, and you're walking down that fairway, and you're even with them. So, exciting times in the Chiefs' kingdom. But let's take one final glance back at the Denver game. You alluded to it, the fact that there was some confidence in playing with them. Now, what'd you take away from it defensively? Because a lot of discussion, you had to get pressure, at least something on Peyton Manning, but no sacks and no hurries, really.
Right. You know, that was my mantra all week, was that I felt like you had to get pressure up the middle. You had to collapse and deal with the integrity of the pocket so that Peyton could not step up and deliver the ball the way he wanted. You knew you weren't going to confuse Peyton Manning, because he is Peyton Manning, but the fact is you wanted at least to make him feel a little bit uncomfortable, keep him back there a little bit so maybe Holly and Houston on either side could come back and get some things. But that did not happen. Again, when you don't get any sacks, you have no pressures to speak of, that's just not a good thing. That's not winning football right now, and they know that, and they know that it's got to get better.
Offensively, there were opportunities. The red zone turnover, my mantra was you got to play downhill, particularly in Denver against the Broncos, and the Chiefs never did that. They were just, the treadmill was working uphill, but the red zone turnover was big, and then there were some other chances. When you hold them four straight possessions without scoring, but you don't get anything yourself, what about those two sequences of the game?
That is the big thing. When you look at the fact, anybody that holds Denver four straight times and you have a chance to get either tied within three or within a score as opposed to two scores, that's huge. It would have been huge, I think, for the momentum side of things, because the crowd really wasn't in it. They were cheering loud, but I was down there, and I've seen it, or I've heard it rather worse. They just need to get a little something going, and again, it just didn't happen for whatever reasons. I thought special teams played okay, but it was kind of a wash right there, and when it came down to it, they just put too many points on the board. Again, you hold Peyton Manning, quite honestly, to 28 points or 27 points. People think that's a decent job, but it just didn't happen on the offensive side of the ball.
And the Broncos are 20-1 in their last 21 regular season games, so, hey, here we go. But Chiefs are 9-1, Broncos are 9-1, but here come the San Diego Chargers, a team that's very capable. Although they're 4-6, that record could be flipped very easily. But this is about dealing with adversity, the whole mantra of play on. When we come back, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, we're going to talk about how the Chiefs are handling the adversity of losing their first game after being the National Football League's last remaining unbeaten team.
This is a tunnel, but not everyone can enter. The men who gather here have a kingdom to honor, a home to defend. And come Sunday, there's no place they'd rather be. This is the Players' Tunnel at Arrowhead. Just a few short steps from glory.
The Chargers come to town this week. Just remind everybody in San Diego and the Chargers travel crew, it'll be really cold, which it's going to be. And it's 10 o'clock their time. Was I supposed to remind them of that?
That does make a difference. There's no doubt about it.
Okay, dealing with adversity. To me, Kendall, this team was born in the childbirth pain of adversity. Andy Reid got fired. Alex Smith basically got fired and then traded. The 23 guys on this roster a year ago went through the worst season in franchise history. What have you picked up this week that these guys are handling this, can bounce back?
Well, not only this week. I picked it up when I spoke to them after the game, and they were just like, listen, we're not happy about this, but it does happen. Very rarely do you go undefeated in this league. It has only happened once, so you know it's going to happen. You don't want it to, but we've got to build on what we did here, and we've got to get ready. And while Denver is a couple weeks away, the fact is we've got San Diego next week, and that's what they were talking about. I liked how they were approaching everything. They were doing a really nice job. And again, it's adversity, but it's basically the marathon of the NFL season.
I've said it before, I'll say it again. The biggest advantage the Chiefs have here is the experience of Andy Reid. He's done this time and time again, and he knows what to do here to try to bounce back and get things going. Let's hear from Andy Reid. He'll take a glance back at Denver, but mostly what he's doing to get his guys ready to go for the Chargers.
The first 19 plays offensively, you know, we had an offside, we had a drop, we had a turnover, we had a fumble, snap. So you're playing against a good football team. That's not even adding in the penalties that we had there after that. So you can learn from these things. I've got to make sure that I get ourselves in the right position to start games. We're not starting fast enough right now, so I'm going to work on that part, make sure that I do a better job of giving the guys an opportunity. But within those first 19 plays, now those are some things that we need to get corrected.
What about the ability to start fast this week against San Diego?
Well, I think it's imperative because it's something the Chiefs, and you heard Coach Reid talk about it, they haven't done it as well as they would like. They did it defensively very, very, very well last week because coming into that game, Denver had scored the most points in the first possession of the first half and second half. So they did it well from that standpoint. But offensively, you want to put some points on the board and try to play from either even or ahead. And that just changes the complexion of the game so much.
Yeah, I felt like there was some anxiety, even starting with this play. You get backed up on a penalty on your first snap. And again, this is a team, the Chiefs like to play downhill. This is not an uphill playing team. And this first series was an uphill series.
Well, it was, again, when you get the it's all of a sudden it's first and 15. And you know what? When you see right there, that's kind of a microcosm of what's going on right now, which is to key on number 25. And if anybody's going to beat you, he's going to beat you. But, again, right there you see Sausage, and what he does a nice job getting a pass, which was a little bit inaccurate and something I think that Alex Smith is working on, because I don't think he threw it as well as he'd like to the entire game. However, that was a fabulous pass that I think Avery would agree needed to be caught.
Yeah, when I saw the safety come over the top, I thought, uh-oh. But then he just misses this one in McGrath. But that Alex put it on a pinpoint throw to Avery, which could have been a touchdown. Three sacks in this game. Two are really critical. Took him out of field goal range. Well, again, the Chiefs weren't able to sack Peyton Manning at any time during the game. And then you mentioned Charles. Now, one of the keys in the next 6 weeks is going to be trying to figure out how to get this guy going while teams are just all over him and boxing one him. We'll talk about that in the second part of the show. But again, this was a game where Denver jumps on top and you have to play uphill, and this is something the Chiefs hadn't done much, and they hadn't trailed by more than a touchdown, but they did in this game.
And it was a little bit disheartening to see in terms of the offensive line side of things. And of course there you see a big play in the first half, giving the ball up in that fumble. I think had they went up there and scored either a touchdown or a field goal, that would have been huge. That was kind of either a 10 or a 14-point swing, however you want to put it. But getting back to my earlier thought in terms of the offensive line, had been playing better, felt like they took a step back maybe this week, and, of course, got a few guys banged up. But to let the pressure get to Alex Smith like they did is something I didn't expect. If you talked about two teams, one was going to have three sacks and one was not going to have any, you would have thought it would have been the opposite. So that was a little disheartening, and I certainly think that's something, as I said earlier in the show, has to change this week.
Well, for Alex Smith, first of all, it's an interesting story. He's a San Diego kid. He was one of the top players in San Diego County. I did a Chiefs brief on it this week. you can look at it and find it at kcchiefs.com. But for Alex Smith, and looking back at the Denver game, he knows it's just a matter of kind of tighten things up on his throws, his reads, and then catching him, blocking him, a little bit of everything. Just tighten the screw a little bit.
I think I look back at myself and how I played on Sunday night, and certainly didn't play very well early. Missed some opportunities there that really could have helped us get into a flow. So, you know, certainly just come out and, execute. I mean, it's the little things. You know, I think we turn on the tape, and all of us offensively, we all look at it, and it was all the little things. Little thing here, little thing there, and we all had our share. And, you know, that's what results into inexecution. Is that a word? You know, but basically an inability to move the football. Kind of the details of everything.
Okay, let's talk about Alex's reaction to that game and moving into against his hometown.
Well, I think it's very businesslike, and that's what you want in a leader. When you look at Alex Smith, we all know he understands every facet of the game, and he's done a lot of good things this year, but I think he holds himself to a higher standard, certainly wanting to hit some passes like you see right there to Avery, and then also there to Junior Hemingway. Those are the type of things that I think he expects that we saw earlier in the season. We're not seeing it right now. But again, not to displace anything or not say anything's important, but the Chiefs are still 9-1. They're tied for first place in the division. There's four division games left. This is not the end of the world. And what I think you see there in his demeanor is he knows that. It's one game, you've got 10 left, or 6 left, rather.
Yep, and tied for first in the best division in the National Football League. That's another thing here. Went to Helix High School, Helix Charter High School, played with Reggie Bush there. Again, you can see it at kcchiefs.com. We go back and look at it. He was sitting there on the Heisman stage with Reggie Bush. It's the only time in Heisman history two guys from the same high school were sitting on that stage. But this, what makes Alex go, goes all the way back to Helix. He was the class president. He had a, you know, ridiculous GPA. But what about playing against your hometown? I mean, you actually had to play against the Chiefs when Right. You were a Saint and a Steeler. What's that like?
You know what? Anybody that says that you don't get excited to come back is lying. I mean, it's what it is. I remember back when I was with the Steelers, the first time I came in to play at Kansas City. It's a pretty cool thing. And certainly when you go back home, the ticket demands and things of that nature are more, but I have no doubt in Alex's case, and it was in my case, your wife handles that things and you don't deal with any of it. So he knows it's business at hand. This guy is workmanlike. It's not 9 to 5. It's about 6 to 10. I mean, this guy is flat going after it, and he's doing everything he can to right the ship and get this last 6-game stretch going the right way.
And the numbers, 28-6-1, are impressive. That's his record.
Yeah.
You can't make that stuff up. All right, now let's talk about the Arrowhead advantage here. I mentioned it'll be at 10 o'clock in case you're watching in San Diego. It's at noon Central Time, but 10 o'clock Pacific Time. It'll be very, very cold, so bundle up. But what about Arrowhead being an advantage? I said on the post game, this needs to be, I know there's no Guinness Book of World Records judge here this time, but the Chiefs crowd might be the biggest advantage they have. What do you think?
You're exactly right. You do need to approach that type of a decibel level, because the one thing you want to do is you want to make sure that Dunlap and Fluker cannot get off on the count, that they cannot hear Philip Rivers when he's going on his silent counts and doing different things. And if you do that now as a rusher on the outside, you're getting effectively at least a half a step, maybe more. They've got to do that. I think that Dontari Poe has to get back to how he had been playing, which was putting pressure up front. Don't have to sack the QB. You just have to corrupt the integrity of the pocket. And then from a run game standpoint, they can't let that get going. Because when you look at it, I think San Diego runs the ball pretty well. They do a decent job. So you can't get that going, because if you do, now you put your defense in a little bit of peril, because you got two different heads that you have to deal with. If you can make it just a passing game, I think you've got a pretty good chance to get Diego.
That in mind, with 35 sacks in the first 7 games, we were getting used to three or four sack games. There's been one now the last 3, one, none the last 2. What do you do to get sacks against a Philip Rivers?
Well, you know what? It's what I just talked about, is getting pressure and getting pressure on the sides, and then being at home is a big deal also. But when it comes down to it, I would completely expect San Diego to try to use some of the game plan that Denver was using, which is to get rid of the ball quickly. They had to do it maybe for different reasons in terms of Peyton's reasoning. But when you look at it, if you can render that pass rush ineffective in terms of not forcing fumbles, not getting TDs, not giving up touchdowns, from the defensive side of the ball, if you're playing the Chiefs, that's what you're trying to do. They have to come up with something different, and I have no doubt that the chess master and Coach Sutton will figure something out to get some pressure, because when it comes down to it, you have to do something. And when you look at Phillip Rivers, you know, with pressure, he's got a 47 rating. Without pressure, it's 114. So that's night and day. That's one of the worst in the NFL in terms of the disparity. So that's something that they have to be wary of as well. They have to take advantage of that.
Yet he's 71% accuracy. That's best in the NFL, even better than Peyton Manning. But two guys that are leaders on this defense, along with Derek Johnson, Tom Bahali has seen Phillip Rivers a lot. Kendrick Lewis, of course, is the leader of the secondary. These two guys give us some reaction in trying to get ready for Phillip Rivers and his Charger teammates.
Absolutely. Watching film, you can see he's playing at his best. He's not making the decisions he used to make, where he used to try to force throws and trust in his arm and things like that. He's at his top of his game, and we're going to have a tough matchup this game with Phillip Rivers. You know, he's a good quarterback. He's been in this league for a long time. We, you know, have lots of success. So we got a challenge, and we're up for the challenge.
He can get rid of the ball fast, and then at times he holds the ball because he makes plays down the field. He knows how to work the pocket. He drops back far in the pocket and then climb the pocket. So it's hard for rushers because we think we can get there from the edge, and then he's inside. So we have to do a good job, you know, as far as rushing him.
I think the amount of sweat that Tom Bahali has lost since training camp would fill the Mediterranean Sea.
Beating up like a freshly waxed car.
Well, I hope some of that sweat is on Phillip Rivers. But let's give Phillip some credit here, and you heard both those guys react. Just the last 3 years, 2010, 11, and 12, Phillip Rivers had 99 giveaways himself, 16 lost fumbles, and 83 interceptions. That's two giveaways a game. This year, it's not the way.
No, you're exactly right. He's only fumbled once, and he did not give that one away. So he's completely changed what's going on there, and you have to credit that to the coaching staff and what they're doing, I would assume. But, yeah, doing a really, really nice job in that and seems to have complete control of the team. In the past, I always called him Phillip, and it was a cut-down on him as opposed to calling him Phil. Right now, he's Phil. He's playing well. He's doing some really good things. You know what, and it's, I think, no coincidence that Mr. Woodhead's there, because the one thing that he likes to do is be able to throw to the back, out of the backfield. He's done a lot of that. And then the resurgence of Gates has been pretty impressive as well. Rivers to Gates, most touchdowns in NFL history, almost by 10 over the invariable, what was it, Ben Coates and I think Drew Bledsoe. Figure that one out. So, again, doing some nice things. And once again, the tight ends in the league are big, fast. They're former basketball players like he is, and they're doing some good things. It's no easy test this week either.
Okay. For Kansas City, then, they got to get some pressure on Phillip Rivers, and the crowd's got to be involved in this game big time. But let's go now to Jamaal Charles. Charles broke a long run, 35 yards, the longest run of the season by anyone in the Denver game. But I want to ask you about Jamaal in the passing game. This is a new approach that Andy Reid has brought to the Kansas City Chiefs, and that is Jamaal runs it, Jamaal catches it. But what are teams doing to shut down Jamaal Charles in the passing game?
Well, I alluded to it a little bit earlier in the show in terms of they're just deciding that, okay, if the Chiefs are going to beat us, it's not going to be Jamaal. It'll be everybody else, and we'll take our chances. So they're effectively playing a box of one. You're spying Jamaal wherever you can go, and you're dealing with everything else. And it's interesting because he's still doing some good things. He has only 8 negative carries this year on roughly 160, so doing a nice job there. He's had only one 100-yard game, but he's had 50-plus yards in every single game, and he's had 80 or 70-plus yards in all but one game, which is second in the league next to Alfred Williams over in Washington. So he's still shouldering the load, 37% of the offense from line of scrimmage. So he just hasn't broke out those long, long chunks, which you would like to see him get, and which we saw last year.
He's now over 7,000 yards from scrimmage, which is top five in Kansas City Chiefs history. But I'm just curious in the next 6 weeks what the Chiefs offensive staff will do, particularly to get that box and one, get rid of him, and try to get Jamaal involved in the passing game. Now let's talk about Derek Johnson here a little bit, because he has also faced Phillip Rivers time and time again. In fact, Phillip Rivers, you had a great stat on this. I'm going to steal it and get your comments. That's 10 wins by Phillip Rivers over the Kansas City Chiefs. Only two other quarterbacks have had more against the Chiefs in history.
Yeah, you've had Fouts, and the other one was?
John Elway.
Whew. that's pretty good company, folks. So, yeah, you've got a guy that's been here and done it. But, again, when you have people like Derek Johnson back there running after him, you've got a good chance to maybe make sure that you don't add to that.
Well, and people talk about Tombaugh's sacks and should, and they talk about Justin Houston's sacks and should. They talk about Dontari Poe. These guys are all headed to the Pro Bowl. But I was asked, who's the MVP of the 9-1 start? And to me, it's Derek Johnson. Because, and he made plays, he had the fumble return. He almost, if Manning doesn't get in his way, that's going to be a touchdown. I just think in the next 6 weeks, I'm so fired up to see what this guy can do to try to lead the Chiefs to a division title.
Well, so many different times, you just see him knife through the defensive line and offensive line and make plays. He reminds me, again, of the late Junior Seau, in fact, of how he'll go underneath people. And I think as a coach, you're like, no, yes, great play. I mean, he has that innate ability to understand where he needs to get to, how he needs to do it, and whether he can get there in time. And he does a nice job of that. And certainly in the passing game, you haven't seen it as much this year, but in general, he does a really nice job getting into his zones and reading the eyes of the QB. So that would certainly be something to see him get a little bit more on track with this week.
Yeah, just when you see a big defensive play like that, you expect to see 56 around the ball. And again, maybe the most key guy. One of the most key guys on this team going into this next 6 weeks. We come back, we're going to talk more about San Diego's weapons. We'll get into North Platte, Nebraska, and the leading rookie receiver right now in the National Football League. Plus, we'll have our focus point. All that comes up in our final portion of this week's edition of our Midwest Ford Dealers Chiefs Live Show.
This is a microphone like no other microphone. It's not meant for karaoke or morning announcements, no. This mic has more important things to do.
Touchdown! Touchdown!
This is the microphone of Mitch Holthus, the voice of the Chiefs. Come Sunday, it will reach to the far corners of the kingdom.
Nine and one Kansas City, six games to go, tied with 9-1 Denver Broncos. And the doors to Arrowhead get opened up again this week. It'll be a cold day, noon start, 10 o'clock start for you folks in the Pacific time zone. And a very, very cold
game. Make sure and let the players know.
Yeah. First thing you see when you go into Denver is they give you the 5,280 feet. We'll just let you know it's 10 o'clock.
Just trying to help.
It's a noon start, so don't go crazy. We didn't move the kick up 2 hours just for the visitors, quite honestly. But let's get into a little bit further breakdown on San Diego, because a big key is throwing to the running backs. You alluded to this earlier in the show. What do you see in Danny Woodhead? This is a guy who was a Division II star. You love Division II guys, but he won the Harlan Hill Trophy twice at Shadron State.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive, because when you've got a guy like that that does what he does, and it's so impressive to do it at that level and be able to then continue to be successful in the NFL. But what he has become is the former Darren Sproles, which is what Philip Rivers liked. And, you know, the tandem between he and Antonio Gates is the best in the NFL. The next best is Graham and Pierre Thomas with New Orleans. So you've got that type of people right there, and they're on par with him. They're doing some good things. But he is a weapon, because he can run the ball. He's hard to see. I mean, people are like, oh, he's small. You're going to thump him. Well, if you can find him sometimes, you're behind those big offensive linemen. So that's something you have to deal with quite a bit.
Another guy the Chiefs will have to deal with is wide receiver Keenan Allen. I loved him coming out of Cal. He is actually the number one receiver right now among rookies in the National Football League. Remember, I had to deal with Vincent Jackson. He's now moved on But what do you see in a Keelan Allen, and what threat does he pose to the Kansas City?
You know what? What I see in him mostly is the fact that he's inspired confidence in his QB to where he'll throw the ball up and trust his abilities to go up and get the ball. And when you have that's a pretty special thing. At 6'3", 211 pounds, he's very, very physical. And again, when I'm watching him, and we'll break this down in a little bit, the fact is, either he's going to come down with the ball or nobody's going to come down with the ball. And Mitch, you know, from a QB standpoint, if you know that the worst thing that's going to happen is an incomplete pass, then you can kind of deal with that and you can take some chances.
Well, our Rachel Sanchi of KCChiefs.com gives us our focus point every week. She micros this game down as the Chiefs get ready to host the San Diego Chargers.
After 11 weeks, the Chiefs' unbelievable run has finally come to an end. The high-flying Denver Broncos proved to be too tough of a test on Sunday night, and the Chiefs were sent home with their first loss of the season. Though the winning streak is over, the heart of the schedule is just getting started, and the Chiefs have a pivotal division matchup on Sunday against the Chargers. Here are the three focus points for Week 12. First, the Chiefs' pass rush. After terrifying the rest of the league over the first 8 weeks of the season, the Chiefs have been unable to generate a sack or quarterback hit in the two games since. One reason why? Their opponents' renewed focus on running the ball. The Broncos and Bills had 36 and 38 rushing attempts respectively in their games against the Chiefs. No other Chiefs opponent has had more than 30 this year, and the average through the first 8 weeks of the season was 22. Forcing the Chiefs' pass rush to respect the ground game has had an effect on their ability to pressure the passer and will be something to keep an eye on in the coming weeks. Speaking of generating a pass rush, our second focus point is the Chargers' offensive line. The Chargers have experienced multiple injuries across the line over the first 10 games of the season and have featured five different starting offensive line combinations. First-round draft choice DJ Fluker is now playing left tackle after spending most of his time in the NFL and college at right tackle. And offensive guard Jeremy Clary has moved to right tackle to fill in that gap. This inconsistency has been problematic for a normally sound offensive line, as Phillip Rivers was sacked three times and hit six others in their 20-16 loss to the Dolphins in Week 11. Finally, Chargers missed tackles. The Chargers have had issues tackling throughout the 2013 season, but they haven't had as glaring of an example of their tackling woes as they did Sunday against the Dolphins. Charles Clay made several Chargers defenders miss en route to a 39-yard score midway through the third quarter, putting the Dolphins up 17-10 and giving them the lead for good. If Chiefs receivers can get the ball in space against the Chargers defense, it could mean big things for the Kansas City offense. As the season winds down, each game gets bigger and bigger, and this week's matchup is no exception. At 4-6 and coming off a three-game losing streak, the Chargers are pretty desperate for a win, and their playoff hopes are fading further each week. Meanwhile, the Chiefs look to respond after their first loss of the season and remain even with the Broncos at the top of the AFC West. So it looks like there's a lot on the line in Week 12.
Yes, there is, Rachel, including the next 6 weeks. But it starts with this week and trying to pressure Phillip Rivers, as we've said. But Kendall, I want to take a look at some plays here. We mentioned Keenan Allen, the rookie wide receiver. What do you see when you see tape with Rivers and where he wants to go?
Well, you're going to look at this play right here, and when you look at it, we'll get to the clicker. You've got a safety right here, deep. He's playing over the top to help out. You've got receiver there, there, and there. But the big thing that you have to notice here is now you've got one-on-one right here with Keenan Allen, and he's just going to run a simple fade route. And the fact is the safety cannot get over the top quick enough to help, and you're going to have a linebacker come out just in case you want to throw the slant route, but the fact is they're throwing the fade, and really does a nice job. We'll watch it run.
And this looks like the play where Cooper was burned the other night by Demaryius Thomas.
You're exactly right, and the fact is a back shoulder throw, and you throw it up, that's a very hard play to defend, and it's just one of those things, because again, they're going to drop somebody out here because they're playing for the possibility of the slant also, but they figured it out, and they're not going to do that. And again, he just releases the ball very quickly and throws it where he can get it and nobody else, and first down. Very nice job, quite honestly. Then when you go, we talked about Woodhead and what he's doing. And this is an interesting one when you look at Woodhead. Oakland has this play defended pretty well, but the fact is center Nick Hardwick, I want you to watch him, and he's right here in the middle. Watch what he does on this play. He does a really nice job, and we'll stop it. Lets his guy slip through, and then he kicks out right there, and gives him the chance to make a good play. And again, that was first and 10. Now all of a sudden you've got second and two, and you've got a lot of different things that you can do as an offense. But again, you're going to see Clary, or rather Hardwick, push out there and kick the defensive end, and it's just going to allow him to come in the middle and get up there. Does a nice job just playing with it, sets his block up, and again, now you've got second and two. And then the last one that we're going to look at is second and four on the four-yard line. And this one, I think, is kind of indicative of what they're doing over there in terms of fooling people a little, because Rivers motions for Woodhead to come in and go over to the right, and he's doing all kinds of different things. Now, generally, Mitch, when you see this and you bring a guy in, you're probably bringing him in for protection, and I think that's what the defense is looking. And as we let this run, you'll say, whoops, nope, he got the little shovel pass, he gets tackled. I mean, it's too short for anybody to stop him. And the thing that I think is interesting with that also is the fact that there's no danger of anything really bad happening, because, folks, if he drops that ball, it's an incomplete pass. So the fact is they're doing a lot of different things with him, and that's something they've been lacking in the past.
Yeah, he cleaned out the box, and it was right there. Okay, one final thing to deal with here, and that's special teams. And we kind of alluded to maybe early in the show, the Chiefs have, you know, we also got used to a bunch of sacks. We also got used to explosive special teams plays, not just the returns, by a fumbled muff punt against Tennessee. Those have not been there the last 3 weeks.
They haven't, and Coach Tobe calls those monster plays, and those haven't happened here lately. And again, when you look at San Diego, they've had two blocked field goals within the 30 to 39 range, so there's an issue there certainly. Then you look at Novak not putting the ball in the end zone very much in terms of kickoffs. So one out of four times he's going to kick a touchback. So that means that we're going to have a chance to bring the ball back this week. You're going to see Demps naturally, but you're going to see Nile Davis a little bit also. They're trying to slowly work him in there because he really has that type of speed. They feel like he can do it. They're just trying to bring him along slowly. So that's certainly something. And then, you know, I think to Dustin's own admission, he didn't hit the ball as well as he would have liked to in Denver. Now, he still had a 40-yard net, which is pretty good, but I think he expects more from himself. And again, when it comes down to it, a couple of those balls that bounced around the 10 just went the wrong way.
Well, here's where we get so used to him.
Right.
But at counting up, there was those three touchbacks. Now, you could argue that's 45 yards of field.
Mm-hmm.
That equates to, what, 3.5 points?
There's no question
so
about it.
So that comes back to your nitpicking on the and being so precise to beat a team like Denver and beating a team like San Diego.
Well, it is. And the other thing is you don't take into account is the fact that the Gunners have to get down there. And I think Coach Tobe felt like they should have been able to get down there and make a play on the ball also. That's what he expects, and that's what the Gunners expect also. So, you know, it goes hand in hand. It's not always just what you see at first glance. You study it a little bit more. There's a few more intricacies that go along with it.
Most of the folks in the Chief Kingdom are just like the two of us. This is exciting. For only the fourth time in 15 years, Kansas City's tied for first, headed down the stretch with six games. Kendall, this is real drama, and it's a lot of fun.
It really is. It's a six-game season right now for the division championship, and I like where we're seated.
Chiefs and Chargers, buddy, here we go. Boom. Thanks for joining us on this edition, the play-on edition of our Midwest Ford Dealers Chiefs Live Show.